7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
Welcome, friends, to episode 56 of Color of Magic, your gaming and magic podcast, where we try to give a little bit of ear time to issues and people and things that don't normally get it in gaming, and especially magic. I am your host, Daquan Watson, and as always, I've got my trusty sidekick here, Brian Allen. How's it going, man?
Going well. Episode 56, Dolores Taylor episode.
Yep, I don't know, man. LT's had some issues. I don't know if we want to promote that too much.
He's like my cousin-in-law, so I got to try to put him over.
Oh, that's true. I forgot about it. You did tell me that a while back.
Yep. So hopefully, I haven't heard about any arrest lately, so hopefully he's gotten it back together.
Yeah, I think rehab does some people good, you know. Yep. What was it? Rick James told us.
Yeah.
Cocaine's a hell of a drug.
Indeed.
So sad. Oh, man. I want to remind everybody, if you'd like to support the show, check us out over at Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/colorofmagic, and we can really use it and get hooked up and, you know, share some good things. You get access to our Discord. A couple times a month, we do some special episodes just for our patrons. So, yeah, check that out. Also, the show is sponsored by cardsphere.com. If you haven't given a look, go check it out. Especially right now, you may be trying to make a little extra money. You may have some cards sitting around. It's a great way to just toss your cards on their site, send stuff back and forth to other players, cash out into your PayPal account, and put a little bit of scratch away. Matter of fact, I have a bunch built up in my account right now, and I have a pile of cards I need to finish sorting so I can send out to people. So I'll be doing that through this weekend, I think. But with that bit of business out of the way, let's get to some soapbox action.
All right.
This week, I wanted to point out somebody. Like, it just to kind of remind people that sometimes you can have so much money, it doesn't matter how crazy you are. Because it was pointed out to me through a Vice story that the owner, I guess he's the former CEO, actually, I guess. But he's one of the founders of Soylent. For those of you who don't know what Soylent is, it's basically a meal replacement product. It's just, you know, food liquid in a bottle. And it comes in a few different flavors. But this dude, well, let me just read you one of the quotes that they put in the article. And this is from this guy. Matter of fact, the guy's name, I believe, is Reinhardt is his last name. Want to make sure I have that correct so I'm not, like, pointing people in the wrong direction. Rob Reinhardt is the guy's name. And I guess apparently he's still the chairman of Soylent. But this is what he says about Joe Biden. Says, who is this man? I've never heard of him until recently. Nobody knows ever even met him. According to his Wikipedia page, he's a senator from Delaware, which I only know is a state where corporations like to file lawsuits. It looks like he's done pretty much nothing his whole life except be in politics. It also appears that he's been trying to run for president for a very long time. Why now, at a very important time in history, is he suddenly the white knight from the Democratic Party? Oh, like, there's so much wrong with that statement.
Yeah.
Like, first off, you didn't even know that the dude was vice president for 8 years. So that's a thing.
I love when people go, like, nobody I know has even met him, therefore he must not exist. Okay.
Yeah.
That's so problematic.
But then the follow-up is he read up on him on Wikipedia, and then it's like, oh, okay, so this guy's a senator from Delaware, whatever.
Comprehensive research right there. He read up on Wikipedia.
Yeah, but I'm like, but at that point, you already know the guy has done some things. It's just like, and then magically, he's like, he's been trying to run for president for a very long time. Like, no, he was vice president for 8 years. Like,
well, he has been running for president for a while. This is what time number three, so I guess it's technically accurate.
I mean, I guess that's fair, if that's how we want to look at it. That's fair. But yeah, like, this is just such a wild, wild thing here.
It's bizarre. And also his food product, he named Soylent, I assume on purpose.
Yeah, that's also weird. For any of you who don't know the reference, there's an old movie where everybody, like, it's post-apocalyptic, basically, where everybody's drinking and eating this thing called Soylent. And at the end, they discover, spoiler, you know, for whatever, 50-year-old movie at this point.
Yeah.
But it's discovered that they're basically grinding and recycling people and turning it into Soylent to feed it to people. You know, so I don't know why you would have chose Soylent as your name, but hey, that's what this guy did.
And well, it's working, so.
Yeah, and then he kind of goes on to say, like, he kind of goes in on, like, committees and super PACs and stuff, and, like, that Kanye is the only politician he trusts to vote for or something.
It got worse and worse.
Yeah. It's just all craziness. I'm like, how, like, And the problem is, like, if you don't know about people like that in the world, like, you buy their products, you keep supporting them. I'm sure this, the thing that's scary when, like I said, when people have this much money and they're this poorly informed, or I don't know, maybe he has a mental issue. I really don't know. But the concern becomes, what do people like that do with their money? Like, who do they support? Who are they promoting? Right? Because they have huge platforms. They have tons of access to things that the average one of us doesn't. And, you know, they're carrying around these type of views. That's the concern.
Kanye a check, since that's the only candidate he supports.
Maybe he did write Kanye a check for his campaign. I don't know.
Which is sad, because he could have written you or I the same check, because we had about as much chance of getting elected as Kanye did.
Yeah, speaking of, if somebody would have given me betting odds, I'd have thought, just because we're dumb Americans, that Kanye would have got at least 100,000, 200,000 votes. That was not the case. He was lucky to clear 50,000 votes.
And sadly, unless it's been confirmed recently, they still can't get Kim to admit who she voted for.
Yeah, that's both sad and funny. So, yeah, I don't know. This whole thing was just, I don't know. I figured it was fitting with us recording the day after Election Day to just bring this story up, because, man, it is something else. But anyway, Brian, what did you learn last week?
I am in the process of learning how to use OBS, because as some of you have from the podcast have came by and saw, I'm streaming Magic now, and that's a whole different set of plates to keep spinning at once, because there's nothing more fun, as you know, Daquan, than mixing another computer program into the process.
Yeah, it is not easy. I use XSplit, but effectively it's the same thing. You know, matter of fact, I believe XSplit just put out an announcement in either September or early October that they're actually, I want to say even financially to some extent, supporting OBS and what they do.
Okay.
Because OBS is effectively like open source-ish.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool of them. So, I mean, I can always appreciate that. But yeah, you're right. So how's that coming along for you?
Pretty well. There's not a whole lot of technical problems. It's a lot easier to use than I was thinking it would be. So, but it just, as I was saying, anytime you add more programs or more plates to spin, at some point something's going to go out and you're like, okay, I don't know whether it's Arena or OBS or just my internet, maybe the machine, you don't know.
Yeah. It's interesting because, you know, I was in a separate discussion thread through Facebook Messenger last week where one of the creators in there was saying, like, oh, you know, Facebook's going to be the place to stream within 2 years or whatever. And I was like, man, I can list like 30 things Facebook is behind on or needs to fix to make it a quality place to stream, especially if you want to monetize it. But what I discovered in our discussions is a couple of people stream on Facebook just because they're just casual streamers. They never have the intent of heavily monetizing it or anything else. So for them, they feel it's easier because they don't, I mean, I guess learning another software or something is too much or too complicated for them. So they just hop on and they stream on Facebook to, I don't know, like five people. So I just found that very interesting, you know, because if you're going to really do something with any regularity and there's an opportunity to get paid on it, like you might as well get paid for the same work and eventually like build your audience or your brand or something. I just found that to be very interesting, you know, that's the perspective. Cause even in this group, one of the groups I'm in has thousands of people, and I'll see some people in there even advertise their streams, and their streams might get 10 folks because nobody's just looking to stream on Facebook. Like, a matter of fact, discoverability is their biggest problem right now. Like, if I were to go type in Magic the Gathering, it would not bring up everybody streaming Magic the Gathering videos or gaming. So I have no way to find you unless I know your name or your brand specifically to go watch you. Whereas like on Twitch or YouTube, I can put it in and just see all the live streams going on.
Yep.
And then just scroll down and, you know, find whatever content I want. So that's interesting. So now that you're streaming Magic, are you going to have a regular streaming schedule?
I'm trying to do a Monday through Friday and just kind of around 5-ish and see where it goes from there.
Okay. Well, y'all know where to find DL Caesar now if y'all want to watch some extra Magic. And Brian's probably the type of Magic a lot of listeners probably want to watch, right? Because it's not necessarily like I got to play the best deck, the top deck, tournament stuff. It's just playing what you want to have fun with.
Yep. Although, hey, last day I did cram in there and make Mythic, so I guess at some point I'll have to pull out the sledgehammer. And, you know,
nice.
Now that I know I can do it. Or I guess if you play long enough, and like we discussed, just win 50% or better, you can probably get there with Janky Tribal if you grind long enough.
Yeah. I actually did the math. Actually, you can technically do it with less than 50%.
Oh, wow.
Well, it's because when you reach the new ranking level, if you're on the bottom, you won't drop at all.
Okay.
So technically, if you were testing decks and trying different things or whatever, you could lose 15, 20 times there, and those losses don't even matter.
That's true.
So yeah, just kind of a weird thing that when it crossed my mind after we had the last discussion, I was like, oh, technically you could be worse than 50% and still hit Mythic, which is kind of funny.
The paper boomers are gonna love that. More fuel for that feud.
Oh, I'm sure. As far as what I learned last week, well, this was actually this week, yesterday, or I guess as the time of this recording, I guess will be 2 days ago by the time people listen to it. But you know, I will say this: the election happened. We're dumb Americans and people don't understand how elections work. That's the first thing. So these ballots technically get counted up till the 10th in several states and a couple, I think, up until the 12th. So rarely are all the ballots counted on the first day. We view it that way because usually each state is won by a large enough margin that it doesn't really matter what the rest of the ballots are. And rarely does that number change after we call it for the state. They still get counted, and we'll see the final tally, but it doesn't change anything. So this is one of the times a couple of the states are very close, so people are some reason mad about the numbers. Even to the point that earlier I saw a video where people were standing there literally saying, stop the count.
Which is just...
like, basically... cheering against democracy, saying don't count those votes.
Except in the places where our candidate is down. Keep counting those.
Yeah, I did see the president post that, which I thought was funny. But I decided to be cute because somebody had reminded me about the infamous, for those of you that know what it is, the Steiner math promo. So I put it up with a caption that said, this is how Americans are right now. Because they don't understand how to make these predictive ballot counts. Instead, they should just be letting people count the damn votes. And then I posted that, and I was surprised to see how many people knew what some of these classic wrestling promos were. People were actually having fun, kind of excited. I posted these things. I created a little bit of discussion, what I thought was cool. Had a couple people on a string on Facebook talking about stuff. So I thought that was kind of neat that more people knew about these classic wrestling promos than I actually was aware of. I assumed it was going to be kind of like a niche thing. People were going to watch it, see how dumb it was, thought it was kind of funny, and then that was going to be the end of it. But people were almost, I don't know, nostalgic for seeing it in some cases.
And I guess, what did we learn addendum? Other than California, maybe, did Biden win anything by the 9 or 10 points he was predicted to be up by in so many polls?
I don't think so. There may be like Washington.
Yeah, like super liberal.
Yeah, there was like maybe 4 places where that happened, but it wasn't as widespread as they thought.
9 to 10 point leads in all the battleground states, allegedly, or a lot of the battleground states.
Yeah, they just it's weird, especially this year, because there were so many like mail-in ballots and stuff. Like, nobody really knows. I mean, we just got to let people do their jobs. And I mean, as long as...
Have you been polled in the past 10, 20 years, DeQuan, about a presidential? I know I haven't.
I feel like I got called once, like, geez, man, a while ago. Maybe like 8 or 9 years ago.
Because I feel it's like jury duty, you know, like who if they know it's a polling call, answers it and sits there and talks to them.
Yeah. I mean, and really, there's a weird thing, too, because you can only poll certain people. They also tend to skew older. Yeah. I don't know. There's a lot of weird things about that process that don't hold. I mean, we could do a whole episode on just political stuff, I'm sure.
Yeah.
However, we will have a little bit of that at the end of the show. So if that's what you're into, feel free to skip to that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's talk about some just magic stuff from this past weekend. We had a lot. One of the things I think we're seeing first off is both a large number of events and pretty healthy attendance for a lot of these events. You know, granted, they're all online, obviously, but you're seeing a lot of events being run. You know, we're seeing a fair amount of events that are getting 40 or 50 plus for attendance. You know, several big ones over each weekend that are getting 150, 200 people, which is nice. So everybody's being active. There's a lot of organizations running events. Also coming in from around the world, starting to use MTG Melee as well, which is awesome because now we have like a central source to go look at events, look at deck lists. You can even look and see how an individual person or deck performed against other decks or matchups, which is pretty cool. So there's a lot of neat things that we're getting from these events, but I think what we saw is the format is actually very healthy right now. And I think that is part of the reason we're getting a lot of these people participating, you know, that all your cards matter, whatever color you want to play, there's a deck where you can play it. If you want to play aggro, control, some mid-rangey stuff, there's even spots where some decks that are kind of new stepped up and were able to make a little bit of a noise, you know, so that's kind of fun. So yeah, I don't think there's, I mean, I'm not going to say the format's perfect. I don't think any format's ever truly perfect, but this is really nice. You know, when we're taking something, like as an example, we can talk about the CFB Clash from this past weekend. You know, this was their third qualifier of 4, and I believe the next one is like a double qualifier weekend, so they can get people qualified for their championship at the end of the month. But this event had 200 and some players, you know, and it was on top of a weekend where there was a charity event and there was some other thing that had, I think it was like a Japanese autumn championship that had like another 200 and some. So there was tons of events this weekend. And the cool part about
open too, right? There was an arena open also.
Oh, that's true. The arena open was happening. So yeah, that's a thing too.
So you had a lot of places to play Magic if you wanted to play.
Oh yeah, definitely. So looking at this event, you know, I think we did see some like established changes where now Gruul Adventures is kind of becoming the big deck. The second most popular deck was Rakdos Midrange. And then Dimir Rogues was the third most popular deck.
So many people played Adventure since there's really only 2 playable Adventure cards for whatever.
Well, yeah, that's the other thing too, right? Nobody's going to play Adventures anymore because you got rid of the Lucky Clover. But looking at this, the interesting thing is even in an event like this, there wasn't even a Dimir Rogues deck in the top 8. Not to say that in other events there weren't, you know, because there was a couple where, you know, the Rogue deck still did well. but it's not having the numbers I think that everybody feared initially. And I think that's good for the format. I feel like if the most powerful or most dominant deck was the deck that played a lot of counter spells and just milled you and whatever, and did like all the things that players hate, I think it would be a very unfun and boring format for a lot of people.
Yeah.
But it feels like the way that things are, you can at least play different strategies, try different things, and get a few wins. Maybe you don't make the top eight or whatever, but at least you get some wins that matter. And it feels good to have your deck do things. You know, and you're not sitting there slowly getting milled out or whatever it is. Now, not to say they won't still mill you. You run in some that still do their thing. Totally fine. Still happens. But, you know, like I said, you look over the weekend, I don't know if of the big three or four events that happened, you had maybe one that had two Dimir Rogues in the top eight. I think one of them had like one, and then another one like this one had none. So that's pretty good, all things considered.
It's also kind of funny how quickly the Rogues deck went from a thing that you and multiple other content creators didn't want to play because it was so bad to, oh my God, it's one of the best decks in the format with just, it isn't what, maybe five or six cards? Is it even five cards? I don't remember exactly.
Well, the thing is, though, I think it was changing the plan, right? That you created a pile of cards that are working toward the same goal.
Yeah.
That was the thing. Before we got to the most recent set with Zendikar, the rogues that existed before were all trying to do different things. You know, you had one that was trying to mill you, one that was trying to exile things to play stuff. You had another one that wanted you to draw an extra card every turn. You had one that was making you discard. And it was just like, you couldn't put them together to do anything cohesive. All the cards were kind of at odds with each other. And then you got these like four or five together that are like, okay, these all want to mill your opponent. These get a bonus for the number of things in your graveyard. This one lets you sacrifice itself to draw extra cards. So maybe you can find a counter spell or a removal spell or whatever, right? And then it starts to become together as a deck. You know, you have some good early plays. You have some good mid-rangey stuff. And I think that's where it gets its popularity. The other thing, too, is it's a fairly easy deck to play for the most part. There's a few spots you get where you have to make some sequencing decisions that matter. But for the most part, it's a pretty easy deck to play. It's also, I would say, for the most part, pretty budgety to build.
Yeah.
You know, because you only need a few rares outside of your lands, but those tend to be things you're going to play anyway in multiple decks. And you probably already own a few of the cards as well from previous sets, because you're playing like Drown in the Lock, the Enforcer, you know, some of those that you may already have some copies of those from just opening packs and stuff from the last two or three sets. So it makes it a pretty easy deck to build and an easy deck to play. Now, I don't think that means everybody's going to rush out and play it, but I do think it means that the deck's just never going to go away. Like, even if we all decide, all right, this deck only has like a 40% win rate or whatever, people are still going to play it, because occasionally you will get those draws where you just get the safe wins, right? Where you get your two or three early creatures, you get to mill your opponent with stuff, you land a Soaring Thought Thief, and then you happen to have like two Drowned in the Locks and a counter spell in hand. And then that's it. Right. You may take like six, seven, eight turns to kill your opponent from there, but like, you're going to be able to do it.
The card they only run a singleton of hits the discard, hits the graveyard.
Yeah, that happens too. So, yeah, lots of interesting stuff here. But, you know, when you look at the different decks, like, you know, we talked about the Rakdos deck, you know, Gruul Adventures. You're seeing some different Yorian decks getting played. You know, that's pretty popular. Mono green is still a thing. Mono red is still a thing. You're seeing some mono white aggro decks popping up here or there. I mean, it's just like Doom Foretold is a thing again. You know, the control decks that come in like three or four different varieties, because some people are playing Esper, some are just really playing Azorius but splashing for Doom Foretold. So there's a lot going on with the format. So, and I don't even think we've really discovered everything. I just think now the format's finally settled into enough of a groove. We now see the top 3 to 5 decks. And now the Brewers have still, I guess, 3 months with this format, really, until we get the next set. So they can start kind of picking around, seeing if they can find some things that work against multiple decks here and there. And, you know, maybe if you do target Gruul Adventures and flex out your sideboard, maybe there's some fun things you can do there. I mean, how much standard have you... Well, you said you made Mythic, so how much standard have you been playing lately?
Oh, it was a pretty fair amount, especially on Friday when I realized, hey, I hit Diamond, I guess, two or three, and realized, wait, I can do this if I play for the next 3-4 hours.
Okay.
Pretty fair amount. I saw, as you mentioned, a lot of Rakdos. I didn't know exactly what it was... kind of what the archetype was called, but I ran into a fair amount of those. Obviously a whole lot of Gruul. But it's pretty much what we're seeing here in these. And then there would occasionally be some interesting creative things that I hadn't seen before.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. I'm seeing a pretty good variety of things. And I think, for the same levels, like, yeah, you're seeing some mono green decks, you're seeing some Gruul decks, you're seeing some rogue decks. But then you'll run into something and you're like, what is this deck even doing? It's like, who's playing Midnight Clock or wherever that thing is? And, you know,
people are, surprisingly.
Yeah, I've seen it pop up in a few decks. So it's very interesting, you know. But the thing is, it's fun as you're getting a lot of people enjoying themselves on the ladder. I'm seeing a lot more people sharing their footage and their pictures, screenshots from cool or interesting game states. You know, it just feels like a different world than we've had in Standard for the last, I don't know, I'd say probably 4 or 5 months.
I actually used mono green.
Okay.
Because it just it gets those draws where you get Feasting Troll King out way too fast and they can't kill you.
Yeah, I was about to ask you if you're just playing the straight up direct mono green or if you're playing like the food green deck.
Yeah, it's the food.
Yeah, that one's a fun one. It's a fun build. One of the other tournaments that I didn't mention, you know, that I guess technically probably wasn't in MTG Melee was the VML League or the Venus and Mercury League, for those of you that don't know. It was won this past weekend by Caroline Cavanaugh, who is a very friendly Canadian that I've been fortunate to work with on coverage before. And she won for the second time, back to back. So I believe, if I am correct, she beat a field of 16 last time and 32, or maybe it was 32 last time and 64 this time, because I know they've exponentially increased the field for those events. I want to say maybe it was 64, because I feel like she mentioned that they broke it into pods of 8, and then that's how they got their like final brackets of the top 2 from each made it in, with the winners getting a bye in the first round or something is how it worked out. Something like that. But regardless, I mean, that's pretty cool to win any of these leagues, you know, back to back, especially when you do have high quality play in those leagues. But that league does focus on people of marginalized genders. And what's cool is the winner this year got an invite to the Zendikar Rising Championship, I believe is what we're calling that event, here at the end of this month, I think, or the first weekend of December, something like that. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, I think when we have the opportunity to get representation into these types of events, and we talked about this, I think, last week or the week before, you know, it really does matter. When people can look at, I think it matters for two reasons. I will say the first is just general public perception, right? When a player decides to pick up the game and they look at your highest level of competition, or they see who you're promoting or who's streaming a lot or whatever, and you don't see people that look like you or are similar to you, it's a bit of a turnoff.
Yeah.
Because you have to start questioning, like, okay, how are they going to perceive somebody like me if I do decide to be very publicly visible, right? Is the tournament scene or the community going to be welcoming to somebody like me? You know, we had it, you know, we talked about it, I don't know, 15 episodes ago or so when we had JRR2 on. And even until that episode, I didn't know, but he said, you know, I was one of the people he saw streaming, and he was like, oh, okay, well, you know, this dude's streaming, like, it's kind of chill and cool. Then, you know, maybe I'll try streaming Magic. Yeah, and, you know, and that's the thing I wasn't even aware of. So just imagine seeing more women or transgender people or whatever playing at the top level. That has to have an impact. You know, that people go, oh, hey, that person's like me. Or I see how positively people are reacting to this person's success. That's cool. You know, I think it can only go up and be positive for us.
Because we talk about all the time, if you want this game to succeed, you have to want this game to expand.
Yeah, it's equals more money, more sponsors, more product, like more of everything. If you believe you are eventually good enough to get to the top, or that's your goal or whatever, right? Hell, not even for that. Like, if you just want to play in some of these tournaments on MTG Melee every week and just have there be bigger prizes you can play for, you need the game to grow. You want bigger sponsors. You want different outside companies to start running more arena events. You want more Red Bulls to run their tournament series or whatever, right? So there's literally thousands of dollars in giveaways and prizes that you can have access to. You don't get that without that extra growth.
Because we've I come to you from numerous dead games. I can tell you what happens if you don't expand the player base.
For sure. And I've seen a lot of them come and go for those same reasons.
That's how we met playing Raw Deal, not Magic, as I've mentioned on here before.
Yeah.
It was a fun game, but it didn't expand its player base enough to still be going.
True. One of the things I will say too about this is, and I think I mentioned this before, but I want to reiterate it, that people that naysay this, that why do these special events get invites or whatever, like, there's two points here. First off, Wizards has given these invites to a lot of different individual events. I believe the Star City event qualifies you, or the new Star City circuit, whatever it's called, qualifies you for one of these big events in February-ish. Pretty sure the CFB Clash series qualifies you for the Zendikar event as well. There was, I want to say, one of the online convention events recently, I think, also qualified you. So it's not like Wizards is singling out and saying, like, only this event got an extra invite. Like, this is the thing they're saying, hey, people are putting in real effort, trying really hard. These fields are also big. People are putting in multiple days worth of time. Let's reward these people and get them on the biggest stage. Additionally, these aren't invites being taken away from somebody else. The knuckleheads that are like, well, they just want to make sure they get a woman or whatever playing on the pro tour, so they're just giving an invite to and taking it away from somebody else. Like, no, that's not what's happening. Like, this is an additional invite. So if this didn't exist, it's not like there's going to be one more for you to be able to get. That's not what's going on. It's literally just extra invites from Wizard saying, hey, we're acknowledging right now during the pandemic, there's all these big events happening and people are doing a good job running them. People are following them. People are, like I said, putting in multiple days worth of prep and play. Let's get some of these people in our tournament.
Oh, by the way, we're seeing players such as Autumn Burchett and Emma Handy are crushing it.
So. Yeah.
You're right. You don't have a leg to stand on if you're complaining about them at this point.
Yeah, and I'm sure somewhere along the way, there's somebody going like, well, they just wanted to make sure these people got into the tournament. Where, like, well, you know what? They're still winning.
It's not wrestling. They're not making other players lay down once the tournament starts. They're winning the tournaments.
True. And to me, that's the biggest thing. Like, the hardest part to explain to people is that sometimes it's about getting those representatives there first and making it the norm so there's an opportunity for other people. Like, somebody has to hold that door open. Because, you know, and we interviewed Caroline on Supreme Verdict this week. And one of the things she talked about was, you know, sometimes having a hard time, like, organizing trips to tournaments, whatever, because people don't necessarily want to share a room with you or whatever, because you're a different gender than they are, something or whatever, right? So now the trip's more expensive for you, and, like, things that other players don't have to deal with. You already have some of these hurdles. So this is just trying to reduce some of those. Like, I want to say it was Jessa Stefan that maybe 2 years ago posted something about I guess, the pressure that comes with being one of the only women on the top level of the game at the time, because everybody's putting so much on you, right? Because if she fails, people are like, see, this is why women shouldn't be playing Magic or whatever, whatever the knuckleheads say, right? But then if she wins, it's, well, she wouldn't have got the opportunity if she wasn't a woman, blah, 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 right? So if you get 3, 4, 5 non-males that are playing at that level, that becomes less of a story. Now we can focus on just these people playing and being good at Magic. And people forget, like, Jess had won a Grand Prix before that. It wasn't like she was just some bum that they just gave an invite to. Like, same thing where, you know, you're mentioning Emma and Autumn. Like, Autumn, like, Emma just top 8 at an event, and Autumn won a Players Tour championship or whatever. So it's not like these are just random folks that are ending up in these positions. And good for them. Like, I'm not going to sit here and be jealous. Like, celebrate their success like you would anyone else's.
Else you hate her. I mean, it's
just... Well, yeah, if you just don't like the people for whatever reason, that's fine. We all have our favorite faces and heels that we cheer for and cheer against. Like, that's fine. But yeah, it's just one of those things. I think the VML is very cool. It sounds like they're probably going to expand it for next season again. So, I mean, they apparently turned a bunch of people away who wanted to participate this time. So hopefully their series gets bigger and bigger, and maybe that becomes the de facto thing, that if you are a marginalized gender in Magic and you feel comfortable playing in this thing, maybe this is your introduction to top level play. And maybe it's a chance for some of these people to build up a network that they can talk to, test with, hopefully in the future travel with. You know, I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, because even though it's, you know, it's a one-on-one game, so many people forget about or don't talk about the aspect of how you really need, you know, a team to practice with, to travel with, somebody to bounce ideas off of.
Yeah, I agree with you totally. I remember being one of those people. I was in a position where I qualified for a pro tour and effectively didn't have any testing partners. Like, the people I knew were online, and if they were qualified, they already had testing groups, so they didn't want to open tests with me, so right. I couldn't do that, you know. And then I didn't want to just single one of them out that where I was friends with to test with them, because then I'm giving them information that's likely going to end up in front of 5 or 6 other people I may be competing against, and I'm getting nothing in return. So I just had to gamble. And the worst part about it is, turns out I ended up getting very close to what the best deck for the event would have been. If I would have probably had like another week's worth of prep, I probably could have got there. Man. So the disappointing part for me was on the trip back, having the thoughts of like, man, if I'd have had somebody to test with or somebody to play with to like shorten this process, could I have gotten to that deck build, or how much closer could I have gotten to one of those top lists? You know, because I was on the right path. All the logic made sense. I just had some different card choices here or there that just weren't quite good enough against the field that, you know, just the way the things fell, you know, when I was trying to do it all mostly myself. So I totally get that aspect of it for sure. But let's talk about something else. This is a lot less fun, but I did mention it the last couple of weeks, and I had some people sending me some private messages asking about it. And since it came up again in, I guess, November for October's payments, I decided I would mention again this whole YouTube wage staff thing. Because it's now been going for 6 weeks plus, so depending on when you were affected, sometime between 6 weeks and 8 weeks. And there doesn't really seem to be an end in sight. Seems like it's getting worse instead of better. People had their revenue throttled twice. And for me personally, you know, when you're looking at August to September, it was down, I believe my numbers were 22%. And then September to October was down almost 60%.
Man.
Yeah. And nothing I've done. And matter of fact, it's worse because I've also increased my subscriber count and put up a little extra content. So technically I've increased views And I had some support from one of the other big Magic channels that should have also been generating more money. But it's not the case. I am part of a couple different groups now. I'm on one of their things on Google. I'm on some different things on Twitter. I have some people messaging me on Facebook. And mostly to kind of just build my research of the whole thing. And it turns out there are people literally... I have a video also covering this, so I'm not going to go too deep into it. But just youtube.com/PowerDragon. It's the video from Wednesday that went up in the morning. But basically, I've met people now from so many different genres of production. So whether it's gaming, technology, travel, you know, gambling, you know, whatever. They cover all kinds of things. And they're all affected. And it's all different sizes. You know, there's some people smaller than my channel that have been affected. And I'm only at like 7,500 subscribers. So there's people smaller than me that have been affected. There's people 10 times my size that have been affected. So there doesn't seem to be a pattern or rhyme or reason. There's also some people that are completely unaffected. It's hard to tell who, what percentage. It feels like, I wouldn't say half, but it feels like it's more than 20% of the people I've reached out to seem to have been affected. So it's very widespread. We don't really know how large. We're just being told at this time that it's no longer in a technical error, like I was initially told, that we're now being told we have a bunch of invalid traffic and they can't pay us because when the traffic's invalid, the money needs to be refunded to the advertiser. So, interestingly, one of the things I've decided I was going to do, starting probably later this week, I was going to request that my viewers, I was going to start a Discord channel for this on my Discord server, for just people posting, hey, if you're ever watching one of my things and a video comes up, screenshot it, send it to me. Just so, if this happens again, I can say, okay, here's a very large number of people who have watched my stuff and they've watched a video. How come I didn't get paid for those? Because that's the issue here, right? It's all about saying, hey, these are fake views. Worst case scenario, if they're invalid traffic, then they should just be invalidating the invalid traffic and then paying you for the other traffic. Or at the very least, if you're tracking your own stuff with the options they give you, you should be seeing a gigantic spike every time they say there's technically invalid traffic, because you would have your normal traffic, then the additional traffic. Yet nobody's seeing that either. So don't really know what's going on. No, one of the other channels I've been talking with, they had already actually, as it turns out, done the whole like take a snapshot thing. So we'll see how that ends up for them. I'm following that pretty eagerly. And, you know, all I can say is really, if you have any content creators you really like over on YouTube, find a way to support them if you can right now, because there's a good chance they're financial situation is being hammered and it sucks. Let me tell you, I'm going to make less this month from YouTube than I made back in June, which was my first monetized month.
Wow.
And I had at the time about somewhere between 1/6 and 1/7 as many subscribers as I have now, with significantly fewer view counts as well. So that tells you right there alone that something's up. My speculation is still that it's a technical issue that either they don't know how to fix it or it was going to take a long time to fix. So they're just saying, hey, invalid traffic, here's the problem. And probably if I was guessing, and I know this sounds silly, they just may not have understood how many accounts it actually affected. And now that it's becoming a widespread thing, it might become a real issue. I know some people are throwing out, hey, are y'all going to do a class action lawsuit, things like that. I can't really say. There's been a lot of discussion of it, so there's a chance somebody's probably throwing that out there. But who the heck knows at this point? I'm willing to let it play out for another month or so and just see if it corrects itself or they figure out whatever it is. If not, you know, here at the end of November, early December, maybe I'll have a different plan. But otherwise, you know, if it doesn't, I'm probably going to move from doing YouTube stuff to probably just increasing my stream time every week. And instead of putting in time to producing videos, I might just be doing stuff on streams and then just download and just put the stream videos up on YouTube instead of putting real time into creating YouTube stuff.
And I mean, everybody I think could understand why.
Yeah, it's a feel bad for me because I really do like the different interactions between the platform and producing the different content for each. But if it's just not there for the time, and I have a lot of people already supporting the streaming stuff, then, you know, I got to make do what makes sense. You know, and some other people are having that same thought. So it's also an issue that if it doesn't change for YouTube, there may, I don't know if I'd say a mass exodus, but there will be definitely a change in the quality of the content they get, if not a large loss of content for sure. But segueing into finances, see what I did there?
I do.
A couple people have mentioned recently that they are interested in buying and selling collections or cards during the pandemic, and they're not really sure how. And I get that, you know, every right to be concerned. I've been still making collection purchases, but I'm doing them all in situations where we're open air. So I'm not going into anybody's house or anything like I might have previously, you know, where they say like, oh, hey, you should come inside. And I was like, no, we're not doing any of that right now.
No,
that's not even an option.
That's a big negatory, Ghost Rider.
Yeah, because normally it's like if they have a couple of monster boxes or whatever and they want some help carrying them out, I'll go inside, get them and bring them out, you know. But the problem is right now, you don't know how many people they have in the house. Is everybody, you know, they're probably not wearing masks in their own house for good reason. It's probably their family or whatever. It's like, eh, don't want that risk. So we're doing everything where it's either like, hey, you pull up your car, pull up my car, I'll open up the trunk. You know, if you want to exchange stuff, cool, I'll hand you whatever cash or I'll send it to you on Venmo or PayPal or however we're doing it. And that's usually good enough. I have had one purchase I've done where somebody has brought cards outside like that. They weren't totally sure what was in the boxes. I wanted to flip through them. So they basically had a folding table they had set up in their driveway, came and set the boxes out. I flipped through them pretty quickly. And, you know, we agreed on a price and I loaded them in my car. And, you know, we both had masks on and, you know, all that. And that's also reasonable, right? So there are ways you can do it. I would say right now, if you're looking to buy collections, you probably want to do it all locally. So even if you don't, when I say local, I mean within like 2 hours of you, you know, so you're not necessarily, if you don't want to drive and meet and neither of you feel comfortable with it, it's not a far distance to ship something, you know, if y'all want to do it that way. So that's another thing. The best way probably if you're looking to just, well, let's say first to buy, if you're looking to buy collections, probably look for different Facebook groups for your local area. And everybody has them. Like if you look up just Magic, like in my area, I would probably look up like Magic Seattle or Magic Washington or Magic Tacoma or whatever. There's Facebook groups, you know, in your area, Brian, it'd be just look up Magic Dallas, Magic Austin, Magic, whatever, right? They're going to have their groups. And inevitably you will find people that are just like, hey, I'm looking to sell some stuff. Who's interested? And you can get noticed there. You can get to know people. You're also trusted because you're part of those communities. You're actively participating. People know who you are. So it makes the transactions a lot easier. Also, over time, if you're doing stuff within a group and you build up that reputation, people will just start listing you or tagging you as one of the people who buy stuff. You know, I've had that happen a couple times where I'll just see a thing, you know, a notification for Facebook or whatever. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I'll go see what this is. And, you know, most of the time I don't want it, but it's like, hey, at least people are thinking about you and you're top of mind and they're at least recommending you, right? So that's a thing. As far as selling cards, first off, I have to say, obviously, we have a sponsor, cardsphere.com.
Nice.
So, yeah, that's a way. And I actively use Cardsphere. So, I mean, legitly, I'm using the product and I don't get a bonus or anything for using the stuff or whatever. Like it's a good way to sell some stuff. You still have eBay, but that can be time consuming, you know, because you have to take the pictures and wait for your auction to finish and all that stuff. And, you know, then you still have to pay your eBay fees at the end of the month. And, you know, there's all that. So a lot of people don't necessarily want to do that. Plus, you may sell it for way under what you want to sell it for. So that's a concern. There are places like Channel Fireball that are doing their you box it, we buy it, I think is what they call it. Cool. So you can literally just send them a box of stuff and then they tell you what the box of stuff is worth. Now, that being said, be aware that if you want to send a monster box of cards, a 5-row large box, it's going to cost you between $25 and $30 to ship that. They're big and heavy. You can, however, cram about 80% of one of those boxes into the kind of like square priority mail boxes. And that's only about $13. So there's a tip. Only thing I will say is be sure that you tape that son of a gun. Because again, they weigh a lot. They're going to get bounced around. You can easily tear those boxes. So make sure you at least put two bands of tape around the vertical and horizontal just to make sure it like holds well. And I would even say if you could, take time to just seal up the corners a little bit, because that's where a bunch of the break damage could happen if it's going to happen. But yeah, that's one way you could do stuff. You have good websites that pay pretty well, like Card Kingdom. You know, if you just want to piecemeal your cards and you already know what you have, or if you have it into a spreadsheet, I believe they have a thing on their site that lets you upload stuff now so you can quickly see what it'd be worth. So that's a thing you can do. So there's a few choices out there. You know, there's no reason to panic if you're trying to sell stuff. And the other thing is too, again, check your local groups, right? There may be somebody who's just looking to buy, or a local store that needs some inventory right now, because maybe they buy stuff from their players who haven't been coming in, you know, for obvious reasons, or they haven't been able to do the local convention circuit where they would normally buy singles or whatever, or the Grand Prix. So some of these stores and vendors are looking to buy cards as well, in bulk even. So just reach out to them and say, hey, I have this stuff. Here's roughly what's in here. What would you give me for it? Or can I drop them off, or can I bring them by, or whatever? And that way you don't necessarily have to stay there. You could just like, hey, I'll come back and pick it up at this time. And then they can go through it at their leisure, give you a quote, you yay or nay it, and they send you some money. So yeah, so there's a lot of ways. I think people just, unfortunately, it feels like there's a lot of people who just got used to just physically going to a store, physically going to a convention, and you just like hand over your binder or whatever, and they flip through the binder and they pick out 30 cards and say, I'll give you $100 or whatever, right? Or $300, whatever it is. And you can't do that now. So they're like, hey, how do I sell stuff? What are the options that are available if I can't do it face to face? And it's just, you know, you have to take precautions and just look at the new methods and the options that are out there. But there are a lot of ways to go about that for sure. Brian, I want to ask you, though, have you been buying or selling or doing anything with cards or games at all right now during the pandemic?
I did purchase a Commander deck just because I've been talking a lot about it. And at some point, I'm talking to people going to get to actually play Commander at some point during the future.
Dude, it's funny you say that. I actually bought a collection recently that had like 3 or 4 Commander decks. And, you know, everybody knows I play Rift the Awakener. I have one Commander. But, like, I kept one together because I was like, well, I don't have to build a second Commander deck if I just keep one.
Exactly.
But that's cool, dude. So you got a Commander deck. What was that process like for you picking that one up?
Oh, I happened to see it on sale at Walmart, and just I think it makes rhinos. I forget what the commander's name is, but hey, I like rhinos. It's my thought process pretty much.
Okay, so you picked up one of the just commercially available ones.
Yeah,
you just went and picked one. Okay, cool.
Just because it's not gonna be something I'm gonna probably get to play very often, but I do want to at least have a deck for the next time somebody asks.
And that's funny, you know, because at my local Target, we were there not that long ago, and their collectibles wall was devastated.
Yeah, because, I mean, if your local comic store isn't open.
Yeah, I mean, there was nothing. I mean, like Magic, Yu-Gi-Oh, Pokemon, football cards, whatever. They were all low. I mean, there was a few of the big box items, like the Pokemon XE boxes or whatever, EX boxes, but most of it was gone. And, you know, there was like A10 from Yu-Gi-Oh sitting on the shelf. I was just like, wow.
Oh, and you reminded me when you said Target, for people that are going to try to still get the PS5, apparently Target will have them in stock on launch day, but you'll have to pre-order online and choose pick up in store. So it's still going to be, I'm sure Target's website will get all the traffic, so that's still going to be a cluster. But the Target will have them on launch day, apparently.
Good tip. See, people are getting inside info here. Like, this is good to know. Because I don't even know if I want a PS5, but now that I know I could get one.
I wasn't probably going to get either one, but because I'm still in a lot of gaming groups from, you know, doing gaming, writing, and YouTube content, people are trying to send me free Xbox games. Now I think I might have to get one.
Well, that seems like a good deal.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to send me free games, well, I guess I need to go ahead and pick one of those up.
That might mean you're turning into somebody if they're just sending you free stuff.
I think so. Get to know me. Fucking 40-year-old sketch.
I might have attached my train car to the right train here.
I try.
Well, all right, let's get into a little bit of a serious discussion that I promised people that is going to be a little bit political here at the dinner table. And I'm trying to figure out the best way to phrase this topic, but coming off of election season, obviously we're probably still going to be counting votes at the time of this, but we had a lot of posts going around of people saying, hey, I'm a Republican, blah, blah, blah. Hey, I'm a Democrat. Hey, we could still be friends, yada, yada, right? There was a lot of that. And on the surface, I agree with that thought. The problem becomes in how people promote, project, or otherwise manifest those beliefs that become the question. Because if you say, look, I am a conservative because I believe in my religion, I don't know, believe in abstinence or whatever, right? Those are some things you hold. Cool. But the problem becomes when you also say, well, I'm conservative, but I also support, I don't know, this hate group's right to free speech or whatever.
Or I think Black Lives Matter is a terrorist organization.
Yeah. Or like we saw earlier today before we went live, somebody shared a video with me of people that were Republican, and I'm claiming this because some of them had their MAGA hats and stuff, literally standing in front of one of the organizations in Michigan, chanting for them to stop counting votes. I think the actual chant was stop the count.
You're cheering against democracy. I don't get it. I
guess and that's what I'm saying, right? Like, it's not the fact that you have different ideology than me that I have a problem with. It's that the things you are saying and the actions you are making actively work against the well-being of people. And that's where I have a problem. You know, these people are literally saying they want votes to not be counted. Part of it first is, again, being dumb Americans and people don't understand how the election works. Votes get counted for another 6 to 10 days. That's just how it is.
These people understand. They just know it's not going their way right now.
Yeah. Hell, we were talking about it, too, when we did the recount on the Bush election. That went all the way to the beginning of December.
Yeah. And Al Gore, you know, conceded knowing he had multiple legal options because Florida was Florida.
Yeah. And they were like 700 votes separated before the recount or something. But it's the fact that even that is something where you can be Democrat, you can be a Republican, but at the end of the day, we should all be saying whatever we have to do to get the maximum of votes counted is what we should be doing. Like, part of the reason, and you know, this is political here, so feel free to jump out of this discussion, turn us off, whatever, but the reason a couple of these places are taking longer to count votes is because the Republicans actively stopped them from counting votes early, knowing there were going to be a lot of mail-in ballots. They told him, like, no, you shouldn't be counting any of these before Election Day. So because they didn't get their 2 or 3 days head start that they could have easily done, you now have to wait an extra 48 hours or whatever for all these things to get counted. But at the end of the day, it shouldn't matter. Whatever we have to do to efficiently count every single vote, we should be doing. You know, if you support a policy that actively makes life worse for a significant number of humans, we're not going to agree. And no, that's not a good thing. And we're probably not going to be friends. If you are upset or trying to, supporting people, like, not like, okay, man, this is a fire up topic. Like, okay, let's talk about like the border issue, right? All the camps we have, whatever. And of course, people are like, well, Obama started it first and whatever. Like, you know what? Under the Obama administration, we didn't have people actively being operated on and actively getting sick with no type of care. Hell, I just read a thing the other day. There's something like 500 kids or something that we don't even know where their parents are.
Yeah.
And people actively support these activities.
It's worth pointing out that Trump has spent 4 years attempting to tear down so many of Obama's policies, yet all the bad ones he seems to like.
Hell, not like that. You actively support building a wall. However, we've literally looked and researched that wall is costing like 10 times more than they said it was going to cost. And the companies he hired are crooked because they've also looked into that the people played specifically to Trump to get those bids. And now the parts are already falling apart because the foundations are all bad and everything else. But you're still actively supporting that. Like, that's money that we could have put toward preventative measures, toward better education, toward healthcare, toward the homeless situation, toward hell, just youth programs,
yeah.
Like anything, literally hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars we could put toward other things. But you're choosing to not do that. Hell, some money was taken. And this is the thing, too. These people say they support the military. Or they're supposedly the party that supports the military more, right? Some of this money came from the budget that was to help build better schools and stuff for the kids of military people on military bases. Like, no, we can't actively be friends when you are choosing to constantly make the worst decision for citizens of the country. And now, like I said, we can have the discussion about how should we be approaching stuff at the border and who we should or shouldn't be letting in or whatever. Like, that's a valid conversation. But when you're saying literally lock children up like cattle, have children going on trial with a lawyer that doesn't even necessarily speak their language and somehow have to defend themselves and their situation in a courtroom,
yeah,
which is asinine. Like, I couldn't put an English-speaking 8-year-old in there to do that, much less you've got a 5- and 6-year-old Spanish-speaking, non-English-speaking child in there with no parent. And we don't even know where their parents are. Like, you can't actively support that and think we're going to just be friendly constantly. When they're, like, the fact that you see some, like, an athlete speaking out saying, hey, cops shouldn't be killing citizens for no reason.
Yeah, why is this? This shouldn't be controversial. This isn't politics. This should be basic human rights. We are all, regardless what the police on the scene think you did, we all have the right to a fair trial, or we're supposed to.
Yes. And again, I'm not saying, hey, the cops shouldn't be allowed to do anything. We should just have people running through the streets creating crime. Like, absolutely not. If I did do something, and you know, I stole something or you pull me over because I vandalized something or whatever, I don't know. Fine. We have that conversation. I get arrested, write me up, charge me. You know, I get out on bail, then I have my trial. Fine.
Black communities are over-policed and under-protected right now.
For sure. I mean, and here's the thing. Like, I'm one of the people that I will tell you, like, I have met several cops. I don't think they're all bad. A lot of them are. And I've had the conversation with some of them, too, that, you know, you're going to catch hell because for every person like you not speaking up and not making a big deal out of everything, this is going to continue to happen and reflect on you.
And let me, and when we say bad, let me clarify. When I say bad, people assume I mean racist. I don't mean just. Some people just aren't cut out to be cops.
True. Here's the thing. Let me tell you this. Here's a thing that's actually happened. That officers, I'm gonna try to say this so I don't give people's department and stuff away here because I'm not trying to cost somebody their job. But there is a situation within the police community, and apparently it's in multiple police departments, that if you have mental struggles and you feel you need therapy, you can't just speak up and say, hey, I want to take a couple days off and, you know, go to therapy, go do this thing. Or maybe like, hey, for now, every Tuesday, I want to go. You know, because, and to be fair, like, cops do have a stressful job. Like, sometimes there's firefights and different things or whatever. Like, that's a real thing. So to get around this, so they don't lose their job or whatever, they will schedule couples counseling where the significant other just kind of hangs out or sits outside while the officer does the actual counseling. That's the stuff we should be working to change. Right. This is when we're saying, hey, let's take money away from buying these ridiculous Humvees and flamethrowers and other crap these departments are buying. And let's put it toward better training and care so we get better officers if we're still going to continue to have them. But people don't want to have that conversation either.
Because Ferguson, Missouri, they need flamethrowers and military grade Humvees.
Yeah, exactly.
The terrorists are on their way to Missouri as we speak.
And that's the problem. You know, when you're choosing to not listen to those conversations, to not understand what's really happening. Like, I've literally been here and seen the stuff happening. And I've sat on my computer and helped pass information between people when these protests and stuff were going on here. And then when I watch other people say like, oh, here's what's going on. Here's what happened. And these are what people are trying to do. And I'm like, no, that's not at all what's happened. Like, I know people actively on the ground. I'm getting footage from their cell phones and whatever. Like, that's not at all what happened. But they don't want to hear that, right? When you literally have somebody relaying stuff from the trenches. It's like, we can't have active communication if you're just saying like, well, I should be allowed to be different, whatever. Hell, I don't know if I talked about this on the, maybe I did mention it last week, but that person I was discussing with online where like, it was literally my job to get the data for play in stores. And obviously I couldn't give you numbers, but after discussing that with them and saying like, here's why I believe this. And here's where I get my data from. He literally said, well, you have your data and I have mine. And I'm like, okay, that's the end of this discussion. Like, I literally cannot have a further discussion with this person. Like, those type of things happen too often. I said, those people I'm not going to be friends with. There's nothing to gain. We're not going to enrich each other's lives on any serious level. You are choosing not to have a real discussion. You know, we can't discuss anything in good faith. And I'm going to be honest, the worst part probably about those memes that I saw, there weren't any colored people in those pictures.
Of course not.
And, you know, and it's not to make like everything a racist thing, but it's just like, it's easier for you to have that perspective and have that conversation when those decisions don't necessarily actively affect you as much.
Yeah. Before we got on here, I was looking at, you know, some, I won't say any names, some content creators saying they try to keep politics out of their stream. And again, when it doesn't affect you, you can.
Yeah. I mean, we have both now actively had people come in with their views or racial slurs or whatever. Like, we don't get a choice on ignoring these things. Like, we can't just say, like, okay, guys, we're going to turn off this discussion, or hey, we're not going to talk about this today. Like, people bring that into you regularly.
Yeah. My former moderator wanted to know what my thoughts were on Black Lives Matter and George Floyd, and we discussed them, and we couldn't work together anymore after that.
I mean, I've told people before, if I shared everything that came to me in a message, in a DM, or that I deleted on YouTube or whatever, people would just feel bad. So we don't actively get a choice to just ignore these things or not have these discussions. Like, you and I both, we talked about this in our early episodes. Like, this is information, and these are understandings we get taught at 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
have to.
You don't get a choice. Whereas I meet so many people who are in their 20s before they realize some of these things are happening.
I've been profiled minutes after getting off of the stage performing at a venue by the security from the venue. Like, did you watch the show? I was in it.
Damn, that's a rough one, dude.
Yeah. Yes, that's my diabolical plan. I'm going to perform at the casino, then I'm going to rob the place. You caught me.
Yeah, I think the most I've had is like when I've gotten on or off like a bus or something, and I'm one of the first people they've checked to see if I have a ticket, which I was kind of like, why didn't you ask these other four or five people to get off before me? You know, like,
we know why.
But yeah, so I mean, but that's the thing. You can't ignore that stuff. Like, it happens, and it just comes into your life, and there's nothing you can do about it, right? You don't get the active choice to turn it off. So just something I would bring up and mention, because I saw a lot of those memes going around, and it was just kind of like, man, I wish it was just more obvious to you. But I get why you don't understand.
Yeah.
But all right, Brian, why don't you tell people where they can find you on social media?
I am DL Caesar on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram. Our family channel on YouTube is Alan's Ever After.
As always, you can find me at Power Dragon, PowerDragon, just about everywhere. Streaming on Twitch, maybe soon to be doing less on YouTube. Don't know yet. You can also check out my new channel if you want to see about my chickens, my plants, some outdoor stuff we're going to be doing soon over on Power Dragon Outdoors. So check that out as well. But as usual, we're just going to say wherever you are listening, whenever you are listening, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. And please, even if you think it's dumb, do it for the rest of us and just wear your mask, wash your hands, and help us get back to gaming and gathering as soon as possible. If you'd like to further support Color of Magic, you can find us on our website at colorofmtg.com. We also have a Patreon if you'd like to donate, under patreon.com/colorofmagic. You can also find us on Facebook under Color of Magic. And if you want to follow us along at Twitter, you can find us there at colorofmtg. And as always, please share the podcast around to your friends, your network, people you think might enjoy it, because every little bit helps as we're trying to increase our user base.